Hello there, this is Mark Bauerlein for another conversation. Today we have Mary Grace Sexton with us. She is the head of Natalie's Orchid Island Juice Company, but the reason she's come to my attention was because another mission besides profits has, and the quality of her juice has come to the fore, and she's written about it, she's given interviews about it, and she's gotten involved in some organizations that are trying to promote this mission. So first of all, thank you for joining us, Mary Grace.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this.
So why don't I leave it to you to describe this other cause that has come upon you and that you've been working on. Well, when did you start working on this? Maybe
the program is a year old. It's a nonprofit that started through the Juice Company. The Juice Company is 30 years old. And, you know, we're very grateful to God for all the blessings we have. And I started noticing, like, maybe 3 years ago, or that the performance of the employees, the productivity was really dropping. And so then we dealt with it very simply, you know, like we would say, please put your phones in your drawer, you know, when the phones started evolving really strong.
So you identified the technology as a factor in this declining productivity.
Right. And now since then, you know, the Wall Street Journal constantly writes on it and everybody writes on it. Even emails can make an executive, you know, non-productive if they're consumed and it's a compulsive answering instead of being creative. If you don't step away, you'll never be creative. But I was noticing it in our workforce, and it was just, there was such a distraction. So I said, okay, let's start putting them in the drawer and that's it. So what happened was you could literally see them still distracted on what's going on in that drawer to the point where your productivity was declining. And now
they were actually thinking about what's going on that phone inside that drawer. And maybe even not knowing, not checking in, made it worse.
Well, I don't know if it made it worse. I just know that I just felt like it wasn't the right thing to be doing. Number one, at first it was just a productivity issue. And then secondly, then you really start, because I really do care about my employees. Some of them think I'm a little driven, too driven, and maybe too, I'm a little maybe too driven. But that's being nice to myself, because some think I'm a little, you know.
Well, you have to be driven.
Well, yeah, and I am focused.
You've got Tropicana right across town.
I got that. Hey, that's how we got here 30 years later. Is I just always imagine the competitor like right behind me, right behind me. So that's how we drive. So then I realized it was affecting their health too. And now it is exploded. Now you got to understand that was probably 3 years ago or 4 years ago. Right now we literally have lockers, banks of lockers in our production facility to have the production people put them in a locker, because you can't have them on a production floor. They're going to flip it out of their pocket and they're going to get run over by a forklift. It's just so unsafe that people, and what happened is it has evolved so fast that the restrictions haven't been put in place.
You know, I wonder if insurance companies for businesses have now stipulations in their contracts, in their policies about technology, cell phone usage when you're out on the floor. I bet they do.
We address it, you know, ourselves, and so I don't know if the insurance company has spoken with any of the executives, but I did go to a conference the other day, and they brought up an interesting aspect of ethics. They said this technology came in so fast that the ethics didn't come in with it. But that's a different subject for somebody else, because that's a big one. So the technology. So it started at the workplace. And then I had my first grandbaby. And I realized that I try to stay very much away from technology when it's inappropriate, like around the house and things like that. So I saw the baby swiveling her head. She's only 6 months old, to my husband's phone across the room that's not ringing. It's not even ringing. Okay, and I thought to myself, there is something drawing this child to that. So that's where the real fight started.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, you know, I'm a teacher, and as well as working here at First Things. And, you know, several years ago, I actually started banning laptops in the classroom. And I've had many students actually tell me that they thanked me for banning the laptops, because when they're sitting there trying to pay attention to a lecture and someone in the row in front of them, just below in the hall, it has the screen up and a movie is playing or a YouTube video or something, it's hard not to look. It is hard not to be distracted. That screen, it's a draw. And you can't almost control yourself. And she said, my eyes kept going back to the screen. And so you're really right. You have to remove it entirely. You have to make it so you can't look at this. You can't see it. And the fact that the six-month-old baby is, the six-month-old baby is probably seeing his parents, right? Looking at that little thing. Is that it?
Well, no, I believe, in my opinion, and I'm not an expert. These are just humble opinions that my husband hates when I speculate. Okay, but I have to do some of that. It's like, I really think there's frequencies in there that they hear that we don't. Now, I believe there's reports written that there's frequencies that teenagers hear that we don't, as elderly people at my age, don't hear. So I really do think there's something that just draws them to it. But hopefully I'm wrong.
Well, something in there is drawing them. Could be, you know, I'll go with frequencies, because you can see the draw. And, you know, more and more you're seeing the development of studies of the addiction aspect. You got addictive behaviors that are increasing, that you can see where, you know, when you take the phone away, you see symptoms of withdrawal taking place. You see depression. You see the intense moodiness taking place. So you took it away 3 years ago. Did you see an improvement in productivity?
Well, no, we're still fighting it. It's going to be a long-term battle, because, you know, the technology is evolving so fast that they can utilize it even more in more areas. And so the fight is, well, it makes us a better company and things like that, but it doesn't necessarily, we need it. We need all the good parts of it, but there's a lot of detrimental parts to it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So when, that was 3 years ago, that was when you first started seeing you didn't see it in kids. That wasn't your first exposure to the downside.
In fact, the baby's only 2 years old. So the first people I took it away from was saying, we can't have our phones on the desk because they're vibrating. People are getting texts. In fact, I had an executive. Now, this is an executive. They were new. We went into the conference room. I said, I can't have the phones on the phones. You can't have them on, because you're really not completely, you know, aware of what's going on, because you're distracted. So I literally had an executive that left the company because I said, no, we're not having them on the table. And they said, well, my son might call. I said, there's a receptionist. There's a bank. You know, there's three people that can grab the phone and like 10 behind them. I said, if your son calls, they're going to get you out of here in 30 seconds. And that person felt very uncomfortable letting that phone go.
Mary Grace, what did he do before cell phones? What did he think everyone did before cell phones?
Well, that was a younger person. That was a younger person, you know, and they're just.
Well, you know, I was thinking the other day that we are reaching, we're gonna hit a moment in the not too distant future when all of us older folks passeth away, and there will be no more living memory of a time before all of these computer screens. That no one will remember what it was like not to get up in the morning and check that phone. No one will know what it was like not to have a Facebook account, not to be able to walk around with 200 pictures of yourself in your pocket, not to know that you could go a long time without being in contact with people. That's gonna be gone.
I think before that, I think there'll be a lot of sick people. I really do. I think, you know, this. At first, I used to make little signs and laminate them and put them around the house saying there's technology fatigue. So I was telling my oldest daughter and my husband about the technology fatigue, and I just found these signs the other day, and I would lay them around. And but now I believe that the younger generation, like the 20s to the 25s, I literally think they're all on the verge of a nervous breakdown. They all think that they're burnt out, and it's not a sense of being burnt out. Hard work doesn't burn you out. It's something else that agitates it. And I believe that it's gone to the depth of that these people think they're burnt out when they're really on the verge of a nervous breakdown, because their nerves can't, it's not assimilating it's just not assimilating it. The nerves can't take it.
The more you use it, the more temptation there is to use it. Because when you do things like, you know, I was looking at LinkedIn the other day. LinkedIn is you know what the website looks like. And I'm not really on LinkedIn. I made a page. I don't think I even have a picture on there. But once you're on there, you get all these emails, you know, someone wants to connect or you know, these reminders from LinkedIn. And so if you go to the website, what will come up are pictures of people suggesting they are someone to connect to. And if you're on your phone, you take your finger and you scroll down, more pictures will come up with more suggested connections. Mary Grace, you can go on forever. More pictures, more. You keep swirling, saying, "Ooh, you know, your curiosity is aroused, and you want to see pictures of people." You could load in something like, you know, the school you went to that could pare it down. You could find out, and it just draws you in, and they want you to stick. I mean, this is temptation that is built into the site. They want to hold you there. They don't want you to put the phone down. This is not some neutral information source here. This is trying, the technology is out to get into your daily lives every minute.
See, I call that robotism, and nobody will go with me on that, none of my young colleagues. But, you know, they're trying to robotize us. As long as you're in that, and I don't want to be an extremist either, because I want all my customers, because I have the best customers in the world. I work with the best employees in the world. And so I don't want to act too extreme. So I'm trying to hold myself back. So if I act too extreme, you know, I hope.
Extremism in defense of humanity against the onslaughts of technology is no vice.
Okay, there you go. They're trying to robotize us. And it's a sort of slavery too, but people would never use that word. You know, your freedom is literally stolen when they can track you that much.
Well, Henry David Thoreau, men become the tools of their tools. So we see it happening all the time. All right, so what are you doing about it? I mean, you can't be like me and just sit around and complain about get off my lawn and things like that.
What we did is we started a nonprofit, and what it started out is we would have reprieves. And so the reprieves, they would gather these young adults. And it started out where this wonderful gentleman let us use his beautiful lake house at Lake Norman. Not Lake Norman. It was in South Carolina. And so they would go to the lake house, and they would have to cook their own meals. The phones would be taken away from them the moment they arrived. They would have, and we have a director, an executive director, that does an incredible job with this. She sets these reprieves up. They have activities. They have painting. They have writing. They have activities. They can go out in nature. So it started out, we wanted them to be a week long, but nobody's willing to give a week of their life up for this yet. But they will give about 2 days. And so they go on a reprieve. It started at a lake house. Sometimes they just came back from a big nature event where they did that in the mountains of outside Atlanta, where they just went and they hiked 5 miles into this place where they stayed, and they had their events. And sometimes they bring in a speaker, because we don't want it just to be all about our opinion. So she dedicates time to bring in really good speakers.
Now, where do the kids come from? I mean, how do they know about you? And I mean, are these parents who saw my kids are going crazy?
No, these are young adults. We do have a lot of requests to do teenagers, but we're not there yet. We haven't done that yet. But these are young adults. So she's a young college graduate. So she had associates there through churches. Right now it's through churches, the YMCA in Charlotte we're trying to get involved in. So it's through, you know, young adult programs like that we're trying to draw these people in.
Right. What about hitting college campuses?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. She does do that. In fact, what she just had, her name is Bethany Baker. She just had her first private event with a college where she didn't have to, she planned all the curriculum and the speaking and things like that, but they literally had a private event. So they brought their students to it. And that was very interesting.
Well, you know, a lot of colleges, I've spoken to a lot of colleges because the deans of students see not simply that, you know, they're on Facebook or they're on their Snapchat, whatever, and they're not doing their homework, but because they're seeing just a lot of shenanigans take place through the social media, the pictures going around, some of the harassment, the bullying kind of stuff. And so the colleges are saying, this is causing problems for us. This is not helping. It's costing us money. It's costing us time and labor. We're getting students getting into trouble over different things. So I would think that you might have some nice partners potentially among the college people.
She did partner with a college in Knoxville and one here in Florida, and so she's she's partnered with them. But we're also considering, one college said that they wanted to make a class out of it, actually make it like an accredited class. And so we're looking at, you know, we're not the experts in it, but we do want to look into having somebody write a curriculum and possibly, you know, pursuing colleges to teach this class. Now, I don't know whether we would help, you know, and invest in them if they possibly, you know, taught the class. We would take them on a reprieve to show them the difference. But to me, that would be a beautiful thing if we could get a curriculum written.
All right. So what do you see happening during these 2 or 3 days of disconnection?
Well, they have it a little, it was structured, not very, very structured, but structured. And now they're letting up a little bit on some of the structure as they see people can handle it. They would go in there, you know, they would have their meals scheduled, obviously. They would have a speaker that would come in and teach them the detriments of technology. And the speakers come from all, one even came in from Canada. It was a beautiful thing. So they're from all over the country. Then they have activities. And then they do have solitude time.
Do you find any of the people attending these things saying, I want to leave. I don't like it here. Or do they gradually, I remember once we got a computer virus and it crashed at home, so we were without any computer all weekend. And boy, it was the most calm weekend. You know, the relaxation was better than at any other time.
One thing she does do when she goes over it, she goes over the statistics because she's very, very well versed intellectually on the damages of what's going on. Like the baby's brain, 1 to 3 develops in the most important time. If they're on technology, it doesn't develop normally. She has all that. Now, I don't hold the facts like she does in my head. I kind of go to the spiritual side of it, but she does a great job. She does a great job of sharing with them the detriments of it.
Let me ask you this. What is the spiritual side of it?
Well, the spiritual side of it, it started, one of the aspects was that I felt like it's getting so bad that people can't hear the whisper of God. And they're getting very, very, and someone just sent me something that a cardinal said that, in, you know, you have to have the silence. But before I read that, this was like 3 years ago when I said, nobody's hearing the actual whisper of God because it's so distracting. Now, as a person, of my belief, I do believe in Satan. Now, but I want to reach everyone. So it's not just a spiritual thing. It's for other people. It's a healthness thing. It's a wellness thing. But spiritually, I think Satan thinks this is the best hand he's ever had.
You know, when the technology leaders talk about social media, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, and Reid Hoffman, who is LinkedIn. You know, they talk about social media as a cure for loneliness. You know, it's a way to avoid solitude. I think Zuckerberg once put it, we want to make it so that you can share everything. And when you think about the issue of never ever having to be alone, never ever having to have solitude, to feel isolation, you go back and you say, wait a minute, I mean, what about that moment when you go into a church and you sit in the pew by yourself and you just sit and absorb the silence and you open yourself to that whisper? You can't text when you're doing that.
And you know, the sad thing is it's gotten to a point where people feel uncomfortable when they have nothing to do. They feel literally, physically uncomfortable. They don't know how to sit there and do nothing.
I've been walking before, say out in a park or somewhere, and I've seen a young person on the phone and then hang up the phone, and he might keep walking. And after 10 or 15 seconds, he looks down at that phone and you can see him thinking, oh, okay, who can I call? Okay, who can I text? There's a need built in. I need to make contact. I don't like the quiet. I don't like to be with myself. And this is a terrible, terrible thing.
It really is. And you know, and the sad thing is, you know, love comes through people. And so, you know, like on a subway and things like that, it's the saddest thing when, you know, a smile can make such a big difference. It just, people make a difference in people's lives.
Well, they're absorbed in that little screen in front of them. They've got the buds in their ears. They're in their own world. There isn't a lot of a lot of interaction with people in the subway or the buses that I see. And you know, you think again about the moments in the Gospels when Jesus says, you know, I gotta go be by myself. You know, he has to go. It is important for him to leave the people, to leave the crowd. And he's going to be with the Father. But okay, be with the Father, you know, but shut off that phone. You must get away from the social circuit now and then in order to ground yourself, to pray, to listen, you know, to listen to creation coming through. And that's not happening.
And you know, the wellness, if you just even go to the wellness side of it, and you don't even want to, you know, you're going to leave the spiritual sides alone. The texting, the perpetual constant, you know, it's like a bondage when you're texting, because you send out a text and you're going to expect a response, and you're going to text and you respond. So it's a constant that literally leads to anxiety. But people don't want to, I guess everybody thinks they're so in control that it's really not happening to them. I can't understand. See, my biggest issue with this is, why is nobody doing something about this when we know it's so harmful?
I know. I mean, and you're right. A lot of them, it's not fun. They don't enjoy it. When the students leave class, if you go out on the quad of universities between classes, people are walking and everyone's checking the phone because they've all been out of the circuit during class for the last hour, hour and a half. And when you look at their expressions on their faces, it's not fun, it's not joy. There's a little bit of consternation, you know, a little concern. Okay, what's going on? What's been happening in the last hour? Where's everyone going? What's everyone talking about? And it's like they feel, when they're disconnected, they feel disconnected, you know, ontologically disconnected, and they've got to get back into the circuit and make sure everything's okay.
I don't think from these reprieves, I don't think anyone's ever said, wow, that didn't mean anything. They all come out like with revelations about how that this technology is controlling them and them not controlling it. You know, like one of the statements the executive director says, you know, you use it as a tool, don't let the tool master you, like you said. That's a big thing. It's just, you know, it's just a big thing.
All right. So the spiritual motivation is fundamental for you. And do you see that the technology goes hand in hand with young people, millennials, not going to church, not really forming any strong affiliation with any religious institution, and even fostering some atheism among them?
Now, I can't go to that step because I don't know about that. But I certainly know it's so loud that if that was the initiative, then this is the vehicle that he's going to use.
Right.
He's certainly using the vehicle. Like out on the bench, and I just want to insert this before we get too far away, if you're going to go to this first slide. Like at work, we have these two benches in the sun, so when people come out of production on their break, they can go out there and sit in the bench. And it's the saddest thing for me to see that they have their phones in their hand and they're not even talking to their coworker. I mean, there's got to be something interesting or caring-wise or something you want to say to your coworker. He's sitting right there. Those people on the phone, you'll catch up with them after your work. That's one thing that breaks my heart at work, is that you have your coworkers here, and that's just, I'm just simplifying something, but it's a lot more than that. So back to the millennium, maybe perhaps not going to church. I don't know how this is contributing to it, but I know he's using it as a vehicle to help contribute to it.
You know, there was a tweet was sent out by Rod Dreher, the conservative commentator, and he was retweeting a tweet by a pastor who was sitting in his church listening to David Brooks, the New York Times columnist, talk about his religious conversion. And the pastor was tweeting, just there's not, it's silent here, and I'm ready to cry. It was some very emotional statement. But he was taking the time out in the middle of this, of Brooks's presentation, which apparently was very somber, to tweet about it. And even though the content of the tweet was respectful to what Mr. Brooks was saying, what are you doing? You, in order to write this tweet, you have to disengage from what you're hearing. You can't be fully there to what you're hearing. You've got to tell everyone about what you're hearing. And I'm thinking, no, you're not all there. You're not fully involved in this. And believe me, the other people who were sitting in there watching you tweet were not inspired by it.
No. That's why I know I don't want to be an extremist, but like sometimes, you know, my nieces and nephews, they'll fight with me saying, you know, they got the Bible on their phone, so they're going to take it into church. They got the Bible on the phone. And I said, just take the Word of God in the Bible, in their hand, in the book. And I said, and leave the phone in the car. I said, because there's a lot more that comes through that phone than that word.
Mary, do they really think that the tool is so benign, so neutral? I mean, do you really think, well, it's just what we do with the tools. The tools aren't bad by themselves. It's just what we do with them. So do you really think that something so ubiquitous doesn't affect us? You think we can be fully in control of this thing? If that was the case, then we wouldn't have this rising addiction problem to technology.
And that addiction problem is really bad. Like I said, our executive director has all the facts on how, you know, it messes with the brain, just like cocaine.
So, Marcus, do you want to give any information out specific about the project, the website, name?
Oh, it's called AGAP. It's A, capital A, / GAP, G-A-P. And we have the website. Now, it's being my daughter, who's our Vice President of Marketing at Natalie. She's also our president, and she is going to like rebrand us a little bit more hip. We might have been not too serious, but you know, another thing I want to comment is these iWatches.
My son has one, yeah.
And you know what I'm trying to teach people? That when you have an iWatch, you're never fully present to whomever you're with. Don't kid yourself. And so I ask people to just kind of like remove them.
All right, so AGAP, what is the website?
It's agap.life, L-I-F-E.
Okay, so let me recommend that to people, especially those who see the technology afflicting their teens and 20-somethings, and have them go to your materials. And Mary Grace, thank you for joining us, and we wish you
thank
luck.
You. Oh, and thank you very, very much. And also on there, there's the page where they can sign up for an experience, so they can actually go on a reprieve.
Exactly. Exactly. So, all right.
Thank you very, very much.